I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast for Yahoo Sports Canada. I'm your host, William Liu, joined as always to answer your Twitter mailbag questions with Colin host Josh Hart. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. Good week from the Raptors. Mm-hmm. Weather's been a little bit better, maybe a little bit worse in Toronto. It's like really nice for mid-January, so hard to complain.
I can't believe... As someone on Twitter said, I can't believe this is the same city that gave us 2016 All-Star Weekend. How far do you think that set the city back? Because the Raptors are, you know, leveling up as a franchise. I think they're the number one seed at the time in the East, if not number two. Went to the conference finals that year. They had just signed a huge free agent player for $60 million, who was Damari Carroll, but still, that's still a big signing. And they had the All-Star game. Drake was here and everything like that. Honestly, a great All-Star weekend. The three-point contest, the dunk contest, both super memorable. Yep. The only thing was it was minus 25 every single day of that weekend, which is
I think the unbelievable. I think the like All-Star cold and then Views, the Drake album coming out, and both kind of letting people down, I think really set the city back.
Views was not that bad. Okay. I said Views excitedly.
Views has aged really well, but when it came out, it was like kind of like, remember that picture of Peter Mansbridge listening to Views at the airport? Like it was, I don't know, like a director dress from the Queen or something. He was like, we're all in a Canadian heritage moment. I was in Scotland when Views came out and I woke up early to listen to it. And like 20 minutes in, I'm like, Drake, you could have been a little bit more economical with this one, but it's aged really nicely.
Like it has, man.
But that's the thing with it, like every Drake project, is that often too early, and then things mature and they turn out nicely.
You did enjoy Western Road Flows?
No, but of course I love Western. Like whenever he makes a regional reference,
super regional.
I've been to that 7-Eleven. Like that's a very important place too. Lots of shout out to Portage Trail, the gigantic middle school and junior school. It's huge. They have like an underground parking garage in the TDSB school.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, fun fact: when my parents emigrated from China, we moved to Weston and Lawrence. They were very, very much a fish out of water. I think we moved away from that place. The week we moved away from our apartment at Western and Lawrence was one week where the same bank got robbed twice. And they were like, we got to go.
CIBC there? Was the No Frills open when you moved there?
Yes. Yeah, right beside the Salvation Army.
Yeah.
That's Jane and Lawrence, though.
That's Jane and Lawrence, yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's King's Delight, the restaurant. That place is elite. I think it may have been a Stanley suggestion.
All right.
Way back when.
Yeah, Stanley's suggestion right now is don't gentrify Western Road. Leave Western Road alone, please. It needs to retain all its history and character. Anyway, we're not here to talk about 2016 All-Star Weekend. We are here to talk about the breaking news that is Alex Len being waived by the Toronto Raptors. Josh, I have to ask you this. What is your favorite Alex Len as a Raptor memory?
I guess the only appropriate answer is Alex Len, Chris Boucher, Twin Towers on New Year's Eve. Alex Len had like three threes. That's kind of, that's kind of it.
That's, that's the only memorable moment I could come up with. I think he played a little bit more in that Philly game as well against Embiid. They just needed another big body. And he fouled Embiid a few times.
Did nothing in that game.
Yeah, I mean, look, first off, I don't want to disrespect Alex Len whatsoever because I don't think he did anything wrong in terms of just like, yes, he didn't produce and didn't play well, but this is kind of who he is. What? The bar's on the floor.
He didn't do anything wrong. Look, I mean, he didn't play very well or produce much.
No, the bar is in an unfinished basement somewhere in north Etobicoke, man. It's got like the pink insulation on the wall and stuff.
But all of the basements in North Etobicoke are completed because that's where your grandparents live when they come to this country as well.
No. Relax. No. My grandparents got the master bedroom. Don't disrespect them like that, man. Come on.
On the above ground?
Yes.
My grandma lived in the basement. Had her her bedpan. I remember that shit.
Damn.
Man.
It's terrible for the joints. Anyway, Alex Lynch. Look, I didn't think he was like he did anything necessarily to deserve getting cut. I know he didn't produce. But it wasn't like, I guess my surprise really, and we were talking about this, is just, this is just like a miss, like a brick from the front office.
Yeah.
Like this is who Alex Lent is. So when they brought him in, I don't know how much more they could have expected, especially considering he barely played. And now I will have to say, though, he's not that far behind what Baines has produced this year. So that's.
But you can't waive Baines.
No, I mean, he's not like $7.5 million. There's no real reason to do it. But what did you think of the move? And honestly, like,
do you
care?
I obviously he wasn't going to make an impact on the roster. I think that what the front office needs to realize is you kind of have a pattern of success for centers in this organization. You know, Bismack, Boucher now, like, just get somebody long who can run. Who can, like, how Kyle Lowry can make a go in the offense. And Alex Lent didn't present that. Mm. Like, yesterday, I was tweeting, like, I'd like to see a guy like Willie Cauley-Stein, who, yeah, wasn't he's not even that good. Good.
He wasn't but even good.
He's fast. He's just a fast center with long arms. And he's like, it seems like a cool guy who likes to paint. I read a cool article about him in ESPN, the magazine, over the weekend, or ESPN.com. But yeah, like, just find fast, long, bigs. Alex Lent is not fast or very long, and it didn't work out. So that's it's just a brick from the front off. Like, it's just like, you have Boucher, you saw Serge. Like, Serge is obviously a much higher end version of those guys, but guys who can run, who are, you know, have the fitness to go out and run in this Raptors transition offense, it'll work, or at least be a guy who can be out there. There was no way Alex Lent was going to play 14 minutes a game for this team, and at that point, what's the point?
Yeah, I have to say, though, in the short time Alex was here, and I mean short really because he played a grand total of 76 minutes, which by the way, like, the fact that Alex Lent got cut after 76 minutes, meanwhile we had Bruno Caboclo on the team for 4 years doing even less than Alex did, is kind of amazing. But yeah, I mean, I don't think it was Alex's fault necessarily. I just don't think that, this whole style that the Raptors are moving towards, being faster and everything like that, that doesn't fit him. It honestly, it doesn't fit Len either. But, I wish Alex the best. I have to say, though, in those 76 minutes, he did produce three moments, all right, that I remember him for. One is the Knicks corner threes. I thought that was really exciting for a bit. And then I looked into the numbers, and Alex Len had made roughly the same number of threes at roughly the same percentage as Aaron Baines for his career.
Yikes.
Yeah, Alex Lent for his career, 99 for 294 from three, so 33.7%. And if you look at Aaron Baines, it is, let me just pull that up. Aaron Baines for his career is 87 for 276 for 31%. So actually, Alex Lent has made more threes and shot him at a higher percentage than Baines. But that was one moment. The number two moment was Alex Lent saying so many nice things. You know, he said when he signed here, he wanted to sign here because of the development program. They just turned players around. And obviously that has not happened with the program. And he also said he really wanted to make the playoffs because he has never been on a playoff team in like 7 years, which is almost impossible to do in the NBA. But, you know, he wanted to make the playoffs. That's not happening. And then the third thing is he did say that there was tension in the locker room after a loss, which, you know, just a pro tip to all athletes, unless you're like the number one guy.
Yeah.
Don't be saying that stuff. Yes, you lost three in a row to start the season. It sucks. You definitely, the mood can't be happy after a loss, but don't say those words. It's just I applaud him for being honest, of course, but you know, that is just odd that that's one of the three memories he made here in 76 minutes. So good luck to Alex Len. What do you think he's gonna end up next?
Brooklyn, probably.
Okay.
If he wants to be on a playoff team,
I mean,
do they need center? He's not good, but they need center. I don't know. Alex Len, DeAndre Jordan. Who do you pick?
DeAndre Jordan? Are you kidding me?
No, I know, but like they're like if you had to pick up their centers.
Yeah, no,
they're not good.
They'll pick someone up. Watch JaVale get cut by the Cavs and end up on the Nets. That'll happen.
JaVale McGee is the guy who DeAndre Jordan thinks he is. Because everybody seems to really like JaVale McGee. And then there's this reputation that everybody likes DeAndre Jordan. But I've never really – I don't have the same, like, affection towards him as I irrationally have to JaVale McGee.
I think it's because so many star players have loved DeAndre Jordan. And so people now resent the fact that he's on the teams because he's loved by star players. But – even if that's true, that's just life, man. I don't.
Well, no,
don't get mad. That's how every company works.
But clearly, he brings something to the table, and it's his personality. I've just never, like, I've watched DeAndre. He's been in the league for over a decade. I've seen him a lot, but I've never. He's not a guy who I think has a great personality in the way that I think of other guys as maybe not being great players, but just being solid guys. And yeah. I don't know.
Well, JaVale did make a bubble vlog for the Lakers, which I believe
JaVale really McGee well seems like a really friendly guy.
Oh yeah, I mean that's why he keeps ending up on the championship teams. Like he was on the Lakers, he was on the Warriors. Like, you know,
and I get that because he seems like if I could have JaVale McGee a part of my life, I would because he just seems like a friendly dude.
No, he really does seem like a friendly dude. And anyway, shout out Masai for giving him. JaVale McGee's first big contract and then trading him like 2 weeks later for Nene. Anyway, so we're here to take questions. So good luck to Alex Len. Hopefully he does okay. I mean, I didn't think he was that terrible, but he also just didn't play that much to be that terrible, but apparently the Raptors caught him. So we'll see. I think the Raptors probably in the ensuing move with the 15th roster spot, they probably need to bring back another center. I believe we went through the free agent center list last episode. But I mean, we could go through it again. It's just not very exciting. So, you know, I'm just saying, don't get your hopes up. Like in terms of, you know, okay, here's real GMs, free agent centers. Tyson Chandler, Yama Himini, Scala Bissier, Thon Maker, Justin Patton, Caleb Swanigan, Ante Zizic, Ike Anigobu, you know, any of these guys excite you? Joakim Noah, John Henson, Tyler Zeller.
Joakim Noah, that guy's career, he kind of had like the David West exit, but then didn't win a championship. None of those guys.
Yeah.
If the Raptors were playing in the GTA, maybe Thon Maker then, but otherwise,
yeah, I don't know, man. This is who knows?
Utah looked pretty good boxing out Boban. Maybe the Raptors.
Utah's fine, man. He already got a contract. He's all good. They don't have to convert him for a while, so they can keep cycling through centers here. There's a guy Lamine Jenin who was brought up. With
Lamine Jenin,
he is.
That sounds like a French movie about like a you know.
Well, he is
badass from, woman.
He is from Dakar, Senegal, so he would speak French. But this is a name that only popped to the top of my mind because this was brought up. If you listen to the draft episode that I did with Zach Milner of the Stepien, he's like a draft guy, I guess. And he gave a lot of great insight onto the Raptors' two picks, but he also mentioned Lamine Jenin as someone who could potentially fit what the Raptors are looking for. He was quite good in college.
Is he long and fast?
He is described to be the next Pascal Siakam, although I think it's only because they both have, West African passports.
Can he catch?
Yeah, yeah.
Then bring him to Toronto. Like,
okay, all right, there you go. Lamine Jenin, wherever you are, contact the show. I'll forward your email to Nick Nurse.
If you are fast and can catch a lob,
mm-hmm.
I'm willing to like watch for 20 minutes. Like, it's, yeah. I don't know, the bar's in the basement.
Yeah, I hope they bring in someone with that 15 spot who, well, go one of two ways. If you want to use that spot for a developmental guy, like an undrafted center, by all means, go for it. I think it's worth it. I think the Raptors have had such good success converting people. Like Chris Boucher, for example, is a perfect example, right? Yeah. If 3 years from now, this random, you know, pickup who was cut for because of Alex Len comes in and develops into the way Chris says, then, you know, you'd be thrilled. But if you don't go that route, then please get a veteran who can actually do something. Although veteran centers, generally speaking, are not that great. I mean, Alex Len was a veteran center. So let's take your Twitter questions. This is what our original plan was before this groundbreaking move happened. The first question comes from DB, who asks, is it weird that against Charlotte, I caught myself thinking, when is Nick going to put Stanley Johnson in again?
Is no, Stanley Johnson, he's looked great. Like, it's not, I don't know. The Stanley Johnson stuff, it's kind of insulting that everyone's like, I can't believe him. Like, he was around for 2 years. He looked decent in the bubble. Mm-hmm. The Raptors run a defensive scheme that is maybe hard to take up, but is going to make you successful. Stanley Johnson can do that. The threes are fake. But the Raptors seem to be able to manufacture good three-point shooters pretty well these days. Chris Boucher routinely has 6-plus feet of space to shoot wide-open threes. That's great. Mm-hmm. Stanley Johnson is a very talented NBA player. It took him a while to figure out a role. He seems to have found one here. We can all be happy for him without being sort of sardonically amazed that this guy is able to be out on a basketball court. He's good. Like, yeah. it was just that he was behind Rondae Hollis-Jefferson last year. Like, if Chris Boucher had an opportunity, probably would have looked. I think he lost to Rondae legitimately, but
yeah,
he would have probably looked okay.
Yeah, that's true. Although, honestly, this current version of Stanley versus last year's Rondae, I might have to think hard about it because
he takes
less stuff off the table than Rondae did. Although it's still
super I think it's a bit more bounce. Like, he seems to be less clumsy finishing off the offensive rebound, which has been nice. And he's like a better passer. He's none of them should dribble the ball, but he seems to be able to find Pascal a bit more regularly than Rondae did.
Yeah. You know, I guess that is true. It is a little bit insulting, but I think it's more like found money at this point. Everyone's expectations were so low for Stanley based on last season that everything he does feels like a bit of a miracle in a way. And I think that kind of novelty will wear off eventually. But it is just nice. It's like finding $100 in your pocket. You're thrilled. The way you would approach that $100 is totally different than like the X number of, you know, amount of money that you get direct deposited to your account every month. You might save that money. If I find $100 in my pocket randomly, or I find $100 on the street, I'm not saving it. I'm probably buying something stupid or donating it or something, but I'm not going to keep that money. You know what I mean? So I think people are very eager right now with Stanley, and I think rightfully so. I think he's getting a lot of great praise, and to be honest, he is pretty productive. He's definitely deserving of the rotation. I could not be happier for him at the moment. Paul asked a related question. Who has the better case for most improved player so far? The dominant performance of Chris Boucher or the surprising utility of Stanley Johnson? He also asked, also Stanimal, terrible nickname, right? We can, or you want to go with that one? Because I think most improved definitely will not go to Stanley, let's be real.
Yeah, that's
more insulting. I mean, he's at 3 points per game this season. Like,
yeah, like Chris Boucher is a much better case for, there should be, if the NBA had like, comeback player of the year, but you'd have to like be injured.
I was gonna say, what did he come back from?
I don't know, like just malaise. He was injured apparently throughout last season. Chris Boucher is a better case for most improved player.
I agree.
That's easy. I don't know. I don't hate Stanley Johnson calls himself the Stanimal.
Yeah, that's his IG handle.
Yeah, I don't mind the nickname. Do you have any better suggestions?
No, like, but I like Stanley on its own. Stanley is a really powerful name. When you think about Stan, I mean, first off, it sounds like Stan Lee, which is great. You know, Kubrick. I don't know. I like Stanley just as a name, so I just call him Stanley. But yeah, I mean, that's his nickname, I guess. It's yeah. It's a little awkward nickname, I'm not gonna lie, but
can we call him Mr. Stantastic, the way he is, you know, can guard up and down in the, like, he can probably guard 2 through 5.
Yeah, okay. Let's do it. Let's do it. Yeah.
With his elastic limbs.
He's got the stretchiness, yeah.
Yeah, all right.
I mean, think about the guys he's guarded this year, though. Like, they told him to go get Ben Simmons. That was the first game he played this season against Philly. Ben Simmons. He did a good job against Ben, too.
Yeah.
Then it was, who was it? Brandon Ingram the next night against the Pelicans. And he did okay in that game. Then it was Jason Tatum, which nobody did well in that game. I didn't think Stanley did well in that game either. And then, yeah, I mean, he was out there in Portland guarding pretty much everybody. Dame, CJ, yep, switching everywhere, Melo. Against the Warriors, he played a little bit, although, you know, wasn't as impactful. And then Charlotte was definitely out there against Gordon Hayward, yep, some of their tough guards. And then yesterday against Luka, like, that's they're making him do a job, and he's done that job. Yep. So I'm thrilled, man. Good for Stanley.
Do you hate watching Luka play? I'm really sick of him. I don't know what it is. It's his attitude, but it really grates on me, and I don't like being that guy. Yeah. Who, like, you know, young man's NBA players. But he seems, I know they're in the middle of like a 3-game losing streak. Half their team is in COVID protocol. Mm-hmm. So it's probably tough to be out there. But I don't know. I find him so grating. When he's like tearing his jersey and throwing tantrums.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it's January.
I think some people get mad. And they look different. Like, some people get mad and they seem frustrated. Some people get mad and they seem scary. And then some people just get mad and they seem petulant. And he's kind of like, when he's mad, he looks petulant. No, I mean, I definitely enjoy watching Luka play. It's just, I mean.
Well, I like watching him play. I just like watching him lose. Watching
he's
him
a bit of a,
lose.
He might be a bit sore loser, but
yeah,
you know. He's also been anointed quite quickly, but also, like, it's objectively pretty amazing what he's doing out there. Like, I don't think it's just
pure hype. Yeah. I don't want to be mistaken for Montrezl Harrell, but I just, you know, sometimes find him a little annoying.
Shout out Ernie Johnson for quoting that verbatim. Sean Conrad asks, who has been more valuable, Aaron Baines or Slim Duck? Okay, well, I mean,
come on.
It's been Slim Duck. Is Slim Duck going to be the next Siakam, Giannis, or Garnett? No. So
no.
On both fronts, no. How could you be comparing Aaron Baines to Chris Boucher, who you're also comparing to Siakam, Giannis, and Garnett? That's rude. I don't even think you should be comparing Siakam to Giannis and Garnett at this point. Or even Giannis to Garnett, period. Honestly, the whole question is a little off to me. But I do want to ask the question along the lines of what Sean is asking, which is, what player does Chris Boucher remind you of? Because he is a very unique player, considering that I think he's a bit uniquely thin for front court players, but also the skill set to block 3-point shots as a center, to shoot threes, to you know, be as quick and athletic as he is. He's, I don't know, there's not a lot of players like him historically. Does he invoke any specific comps?
I don't know. Yeah, the like Kevin Durant comparisons are overstated, but there's a kind of like incredible length that you see when he's running the floor that is reminiscent of that. Okay. He can't release the ball wherever he wants, so that's where it ends.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But it's just when you, like, see him, I don't know.
He's also smooth like KD, oddly enough.
Yeah.
You know? And then in the moments where there is impact in terms of, like, if he dunks and someone's at the rim and stuff like that, there is, like, a collision. And it looks more dramatic because he's thinner. But I could kind of see, obviously, we're not saying he's KD. As good as he is right now, he's definitely not KD.
Yeah.
But I could see, yeah, I could see a little bit of that.
There's like, a weird, like, rangy but still decent finisher after contactness about him but I don't know,
he is super he is super unique. I think one point that someone brought up was Keon Clark, which then I had to look up how he played and stuff like that, because that was sort of before my time as a fan. And I could kind of see it, you know. Although, I mean, there's like some off-court stuff with Keon that hopefully Chris doesn't never has to go through. But yeah, I could see the lankiness, the aggression going to the basket, the skill set from a guy who you wouldn't necessarily expect. But yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't know. Boucher has like, he reminds me a little bit of like rookie Kristaps Porzingis too, in a way. Cause like Kristaps now is, he's had a couple of injuries. He's a little bit more immobile. He's a lot stiffer now than when he was as a rookie.
He was very stiff, but he used to be
like really lethal and like just moved around and like, you know, block shots from nowhere, shot the threes from deep. Of course he was playing for a terrible Knicks team. So, you know, there's that, but there's a bit of that rookie, Kristaps in him. So I don't know, man, but he's very unique. Yeah. The Raptors exclusively collect unique players. Like the only two sub 6 foot guards who are good, like the Raptors have them. Pascal Siakam starts playing basketball late in his teenage years. The Raptors have him, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I would have to think longer and harder about guys who Chris, but I'm really excited for Chris. Like this is, he's got to be feeling great about himself and you know, kind of, it's amazing. He's what, 26 or something. He's playing out of his mind.
He's 28. He just turned 28, but the age doesn't even really matter here, man. Like, no, what are we trying to look at? We're not trying to have Chris Boucher for 10 years. Or I mean, honest, at this rate, yes, I would. But you know, I don't know. That doesn't worry me. He's in his prime. He should be playing well. No one should be worried about how old he is.
No, what I mean is that you often don't see guys like figure this out, especially guys who aren't like a highly touted prospect. Like it took Chris a while, and you know, this is probably the best he'll ever play, and that's not saying anything light. Like he's a legitimate NBA starting caliber big, and the story of him working at Saint-Hubert is not lost on many, and it's cool. It's cool.
I mean, his story is super cool, man. And honestly, like he's had, I mean, there's the reason he's broken out late in his career is not because he like played for a long time and couldn't cut it and just developed late. It's because he's had like situational things that delayed him. Like situation come out of high school, I think he had to take an extra year because he was like, you know, living on his own and things like that. I watched his documentary. I don't remember all his all the details, but it's a really good doc. I think it was on the Raptors website that it was in French, but it has subtitles. That explained Chris's journey. And then, of course, he got hurt coming out of Oregon, so that missed some time. Then he had to go to the G League instead of getting drafted because he would have been a first-round pick. He absolutely would have been a first-round pick. But he got hurt, and he had to work his way up to the G League. And now he's finally breaking out, which, by the way, if you look at Chris Boucher's projections so far, I was thinking about, like, just him breaking onto the scene. And it did remind me a little bit of when Pascal broke on because if you look at the first year of Chris Boucher, 2018-19, averaged 3 points. Next season, he averaged 7 points, and now he's averaging 16. Pascal, in his rookie year, 4 points. Second year, 7 points. Third year, 16. And they're different types of players, absolutely. But it did kind of remind me of when Pascal was first breaking out, where you were like, okay, I knew the year before he did some stuff, but he was inconsistent off the bench. The year after, you know, that year, I mean, Pascal just came out the gate red hot, was having like, you know, 20-point games regularly. And you're like, yo, we really have something here with Pascal. And then, of course, he went on to win Most Improved. So hopefully, I mean, that would be the best case scenario for how Chris Boucher develops the rest of the season. But if he can follow that Pascal trajectory, I mean, I'd be thrilled, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it would take some changes in his play style. But yeah, if he's able to have that kind of production jump, it'd be awesome. I'm really can't believe it. I do think it's insane to imagine another MIP candidate coming out of the Raptors
so soon.
But yeah. I don't think the case is unwarranted, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's seriously a great story. Another question from CPCSR: Stanley Johnson and Chris Boucher are shooting really high percentages from three. 46% for Stanley, 43% for Chris Boucher. This will regress, and history shows that there will likely be cold stretches ahead for both. How long of a leash does Nick give them if their outside shot goes cold for long stretches? Well, I mean, I think in both cases, I think Nick will continue to look for it because he's already said that anything for Stanley offensively is bonus. So I don't think he's looking for Stanley to hit threes like that. Stanley is shooting a high percentage. He's only shooting like one or two per game. They're wide open threes.
Yeah.
Those are not an issue. Whether he makes those or not, it doesn't really matter. Like Nick says, it's a bonus. Stanley's on the floor for his defense. And Boucher, he's going to be on the floor because Alex Len already got cut and Aaron Baines was doing just as much as Alex Len. So he's going to play regardless. And he's effective around the basket too. So I don't think it actually affects either of them. I think naturally the three-point percentages will come down. But I think the only one that maybe would be even slightly impacted would be Chris.
I don't know.
I just think an impact, if Chris stops shooting the three as efficiently as he does right now, it would actually take some points off the table for the Raptors, and that might affect the Raptors. In a way, because he is shooting like six a game and hitting, I don't know, man, 46%. I mean, damn, that's crazy. 47% from on four threes per game, on four attempts per game. That's amazing. He has the highest effective field goal percentage in the NBA at the moment at 70%. So when he takes a field goal, when he takes a shot, he's going to score very efficiently. Wow, that's pretty amazing.
I guess the thing that I don't really see, like, Chris Boucher is getting a lot of wide open threes, and I don't think that you give into his gravity, which makes Pascal more effective, and sure, those may drop, but I think they're big positives for the rest of the guys that are out there. Mm-hmm. If you're letting guys like Chris Boucher and wait to a negligible extent, Stanley Johnson create gravity on the court. It's Stanley Johnson, it's not true for. But if Chris Boucher is able to open things up for Pascal Siakam in the lane, that's a huge get. Yeah. So I would be very happy to see Chris Boucher's three-point percentage come down. Yeah. Unless it comes down because of an artificial or a sort of it having more to do with his unique looking shooting form.
Yeah. Which I mean the form still does, it is strange. It creates like side spin on the ball and stuff like that. Yeah. But he's not having like bad misses anymore. Like last year he would have air balls, shots that would go really wayward. Now the shots are pretty solid and he has that little like if you notice his footwork, he's doing a little 1-2 into his shot, especially when he's open on the pick and pops. Yeah. And I agree. And I think this is where the Pascal comparison is even maybe more true, is that like in that season, you know, the championship season where Pascal broke out, it was like, all right, you're going to have to guard Kawhi first off. You're probably going to have to double Kawhi unless you got Stanley Johnson. you're going to have to probably blitz the pick and roll with Kyle Lowry because he's tough.
Yeah.
Not leaving Danny Green because he was 50% from three for half the year. And then JV is still a guy who could score, and Serge is a guy who can score, and Mark is a guy who can play make. So Pascal just had a lot of good opportunities, and he just took all those opportunities and ran with it. And that's why it kind of does remind me of that sequence, because in the same situation now, you're not going to stop doubling Pascal because Boucher made one or two threes. You're not going to stop trying to trap Kyle and Fred, right?
Yeah.
And so Boucher is just kind of filling in around the gaps, and he's done a great job. So I hope he keeps it up, man. On the topic of Pascal, next question comes from John, who asks, all of Pascal's bad games seem to be pretty similar, struggling with zone defense, early foul trouble, passive play. Are there game plan related reasons for those poor performances, or is it more of an issue of confidence / rhythm? What do you think?
I'm curious to hear your answer. I have like a pet theory, but I'm sure you've done actual analysis.
You know, I would like to say that's true, but I am sometimes making it up as I go. I think it depends on how the, I think a lot of what Pascal is doing right now is dependent on how the defense plays him. Because I think first off, slow starts, the Raptors keep insisting on starting centers who are kind of bad for the matchup, right? So it's like Alex Len, you know, Baines. And, you know, when Boucher comes in, I feel like Pascal's game takes another step forward, absolutely. Or even when they go to small ball center. But I also think that a lot of what Pascal's current skill set is, the like, if teams really shut down the paint, he doesn't have that many things he can do to beat that outside of trying to take some jumpers or trying to create for others. So he's always a little bit dependent on how the defense plays him, which is probably an argument for why, you know, he needs to improve more offensively, because you kind of expect stars to like break the defense, and the defense breaks Pascal more often than the Pascal breaks the defense at the moment. But
yeah,
I just think it comes down to a skill set issue.
Yeah, I kind of, that's was kind of my thing. Like, if Pascal's first look when he sees the zone is to shoot over it, if it's not working, he'll maybe start to play make. But I think if he doesn't trust his jumper and the defense doesn't, and he has to only be a playmaker, I think that sort of saps his confidence and the confidence of the rest of the guys out there, that, you know, that's when you see Fred hold on to the ball for dear life. And I do think those problems compound. Mm-hmm. If Pascal was able to make a team pay more for trying to zone him up, what a crazy idea to think of Pascal making a team pay to zone him up. But if he's able to figure that out, I think that you don't have him sputter in the first quarter like you sometimes have seen.
Yeah. I would also love if they played him more on the inside to start instead of him like testing his jumper a little bit more. But yeah, I don't know, man. Pascal's been really odd to analyze, because half the time he's been like exactly what the Raptors have needed, and the other half the time it's like, what are you doing? And it happened both happened in the same game last night against the Mavs. Like, first half, I was like, what the hell is this? The second half, I was like, why were you not doing this in the first half? Because, you know, that was exactly what they needed.
I'm surprised that you and Assad didn't do a slander pod after the Mavs game yesterday.
No, we need to be over 500. That's the slander policy. We need to be over 500 to slander anybody.
Fair enough.
What if it's another
500 team? Like, what if the Raptors, like, completely, I don't know.
Nah, I mean, yesterday was just kind of a
win. You'll slander the Bucks if the Raptors beat the Bucks.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What do you mean if? When, baby? When? Okay. All right? You've seen Giannis pull up for three?
Oh, my goodness.
That was bad. Although he did hit the exact same shot earlier in that game, which I do feel bad for him. That shot.
What was Chris Middleton thinking on that last play? Like, was the play not to have...
Bro, it's Chris Middleton. You can't expect this much from him, man.
But why didn't he make the pass? Like, Giannis was wide open.
You know, he probably should have, because I think KD fell asleep on that play and he got wide
open.
But
was that, like, what was the play? Was the play...
The play was probably for him to shoot the jumper, to be honest. I think he probably, like, if I hit the three, we win the game. I'm the hero. But no, I mean, look, listen. All I know Chris Middleton for is making turnovers in very inopportune times, okay? And I don't just mean when Fred and Kyle blitzed them, leading to the dunk by Kawhi against Giannis. I also mean 2017, Game 6, when the Raptors were blowing a 30-point lead to the Bucks in a closeout game, where I believe he made a pass in the final minute of that game where he just completely turned it over to Corey Joseph or to DeMar or something like that. So
I think Corey Joseph and hit DeMar. That's DeMar DeRozan's best game as a
Raptor. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love that game, man. When he threw out that dunk at the end, my goodness. It's just so nasty, man.
So does every Raptor have their most iconic game against the Bucks? I guess Kyle Lowry's game 6 is probably his.
It's definitely past. It's definitely Fred, for sure. Norm, for sure.
Yeah.
And
Kawhi game 6 and DeMar game 6.
Well, no, I mean,
Kawhi closing at the Bucks was his best game as a Raptor.
Okay, it was, but people remember game 7 more.
28-3 run. He went crazy.
No, honestly, man, salute Kawhi for that. salute Kawhi forever for that whole
game. Was the best a Raptor has ever played.
No, it was unbelievable. I have never watched a game where I'm like, the best player in the world plays on the Raptors, and that's what's happening. Yeah.
Yeah, that was still, man.
Kawhi, buddy, come home, man. I know you don't want to, but come home anyway. Apparently, Roots is making gloves for you. So maybe that's the whole difference. Daily Fantasy asks, what do you think of OG's effort on the glass and how he's just overall more engaged in these past couple of games? He's played well. Have you had any complaints about OG Anunoby recently?
Not recently, but I still don't know what changed. Like, he's just kind of, I don't know. OG's OG's fine. I think that the early season hopes of a huge leap are dashed. Good. They didn't really ever make that much sense to me. He played kind of bad when the Raptors were all out of sorts. Makes sense. Moved to Tampa. He looks fine. Yeah, good for, OG looks good. He has a great backup now, which is fun to see.
Yeah.
It's cool. The OG season's going well. He should be happy. He's getting paid.
Yeah.
hard to complain.
I think with OG, I think the big leap, as you mentioned, is not coming. Or has not come, and honestly, likely, probably won't come, because it's just such a hard leap to make. Although I don't want to doubt these guys at the development program. I mean, no one saw this coming from Boucher, for example. But with OG, as compared to last year, he's taking, 1.7 shots more per game, so two extra shots. He's getting to the free throw line twice as much as last year, although it's only three attempts per game, but still, it's not bad. Everything else is kind of the same. He's shooting the three slightly worse, but he's also doubling his three-point volume. Last year he was at 3.3 attempts. Now he's at 5.7. And honestly, he's making tougher threes now, I find. Like yesterday he had James Johnson on the wing, and OG gave him a jab step. James Johnson kind of stepped back just a little bit because he's like, you're probably going to drive anyway. And OG pulled up in his face, and I was like, okay. And he made that. And another one where Fred bounced the ball high to him, so he caught it
base
level instead of in a shooting pocket around the waist, and he still shot that and hit it. So it feels like he's hitting slightly more difficult shots, but I don't know. I'm pretty happy though. I think this is kind of what you expect, and he's bumped his scoring. He's still defending well. He's rebounding decently. It's he's been nice.
There are five Raptors who, I guess maybe. I would even leave Pascal alone at this point. They're the five Raptors. They're good. They're fine.
Yeah.
They're not the problem.
Yeah.
It's weird to me that Kyle hasn't been quite as consistent as you would hope, but I think he's a bit more realistic about the team's future and isn't trying to win on a 60-win pace. There's just not really no chance of that. Fred started really strong, but now has had a few. He didn't have a really good game yesterday. One of the Charlotte games, I don't think he looked great in. I can't remember which one. Both. But I think he looked good at the beginning of the first game. Kyle, Pascal, OG, Chris, they've all been good. No complaints.
Yeah.
Norm's trending towards.
He's trending upwards. Yesterday was a peak Norm game.
He's almost out of the doghouse.
Yeah. No, listen.
Yeah.
Yesterday's stat line of 17 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist is a
perfect Norm Powell, baby.
You look at that stat line, you know who that is.
But how many Kobe assists? Are you counting those?
Well, I mean, you just got to look at the number of offensive rebounds Chris Boucher has.
Yeah, exactly. I would say the Raptors are at 5.5 good players.
Which usually puts you around 500 teams, to be honest.
Huh?
That usually puts you around 500 if you only have 5.5 good players. If you have 7 good players, then all of a sudden you're talking playoffs for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next question from Gabrielle. Why is Nick Nurse ignoring Matt Thomas? So Matt Thomas propaganda is temporarily offline at the moment, considering Nick doesn't want to play him. Do you feel like it's a necessity that Matt needs to play? Would you like
Stanley Johnson's? What's Stanley Johnson's 3-point shooting percentage? No, I don't think Matt Thomas needs to play. He's been a bad defender. This team, we've talked about previously, is only special when their defense is playing well, is performing well, and unless Matt Thomas can contribute to that kind of defense consistently, you unfortunately can't play him. Alex Wong be damned.
Yeah. Well, there's another question from this user who has a Chinese character of Bo. So I don't know what his maybe he's Chinese. I don't know. But anyway, why do people think Matt Thomas should play over TD when he's the worst defender on the team and doesn't present enough of a three-level threat on the other end? He's not close to JJ Redick. I mean, I mean, first off, I think he makes definitely makes less mistakes than Terrence Davis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Terrence Davis
committed on and off the court.
On and off the court. And, you know, he committed five. Oh, yeah. He committed five fouls in 12 minutes last night. And there was that play where I believe somebody dove on the ground to get the steal. Someone else dove on the ground to recover it. Then it was TD and OG and Anobi running a 2-on-1 fast break. And TD passed it straight to the one instead of his teammate. And it went, became a fast break the other way. And then he said, my bad, which, you know.
Yeah, I guess it can't be ignored that Raptors fans are not pleased with the Terrence Davis situation. So there is an outcry and uproar whenever he's out there, especially ahead of a guy who people have a higher estimation of. And unlike, it's not just basketball that determines why people want to watch this team.
Mm. Absolutely.
Clearly, clearly the coaching staff, I wonder why, want to put TD2 ahead of Matt Thomas. And that's their decision, but they can be critiqued for it, and people cannot like the product because of that. It's just well within the rights of people who, you know, subscribe to cable packages and pay exorbitant amounts of money to watch these games. They can say, "I wish this guy wouldn't play." Sorry, pal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I think. In terms of the rotation itself, I don't think TD specifically has the role over anybody. It's clear that they have a top eight now. Their top three off the bench are going to be Chris Boucher, Norman Powell, and now Stanley Johnson. Yeah. Stanley cracking the top eight is amazing, and honestly, he deserves it so far. The ninth guy they've been cycling through, and against the Hornets, who are more of a guard-oriented team, they play Malachi. Against Dallas yesterday, they had a bit more size. And the Raptors are having a lot of success scoring in the paint. So I think that's why they went with TD. I think there should be some games where Matt gets a chance.
But who would it be against?
Teams that zone. Like Miami's coming up, for example. They're probably going to run zone. They're running less zone than last year, but they're probably going to run zone. And if they do, then you can keep Matt out there. There's probably less offensively skilled guards on
Bam Miami. Adebayo is going to...
It's gonna be a bad night. That's bad defense. some bad defense happened before Matt Thomas got to guard Bam Adebayo. I can't blame Matt for what happens there, but I mean he deserves a chance. I think honestly his floor is higher than some of these other guys, you know, and that's not even propaganda. Also, the propaganda is taking on a lot of his own. Me and Alex don't necessarily have to feed it anymore. It's just people have done the job.
It's like a sourdough starter.
Exactly.
I don't
exactly. Except this one actually worked. this one comes from The Real Spicy P. Says, "What do you think TD should do to improve his game?"
Just quit making mistakes. Like,
stop fouling.
That's kind of it. Like, that's what.
No, but seriously, no. Play defense. Like, I don't mean that in like disparaging way. It's just like I remember watching one of those. One of those O'Shea Brissett vlogs, and TD openly admits to the camera, you know, I was just BSing out there defensively. Like, I was like, all right, so you know that. Because he just doesn't play D. Like, well, it's, or doesn't play D correctly. You're supposed to follow a scheme, but, you know. And then all the other stuff, definitely. Yeah. Anyway, Jonathan asks, is it worth it to wait until February 6th when unrestricted free agents who were signed this past season are eligible for trades? Or trying to get a trade done now so that we can add pieces to the Raptors front court. So basically, should we wait 2 weeks until we sign another big or trade for another big? Like, what do you think?
I don't know.
Should we trade for a big now or should we wait later on to trade for a big?
Who becomes available on February 8th, 6th?
I mean, I don't have the full list, but there were some centers that were signed this offseason, all of them going to Detroit. So,
Or is it that we could trade Fred as a part of a package after February 6th? I don't think you're
trading Fred. You could trade Baines, for example, at that point.
Oh, yeah. I don't know who's going to want Baines in 2 weeks.
you know, maybe the Celtics in Indiana and Utah are still franchises that participate in the National Basketball Association.
That's a good point. And, you know, Dallas is out of Dallas is having to start Willie Cauley-Stein with a straight face, which
you're right.
Don't really think they want to be. Maybe. I don't know. I hate trade talk. It's just,
yeah, I don't know, man. No one has inside information here, unfortunately. So
it requires me to like pay close attention to other teams, and I like, you know, we'll watch two basketball games a night, but that's like, I don't really know what's going on in Denver. Like, is Bol Bol in the rotation? Who knows?
He is when everyone has contact tracing on there in their quotations.
Is Bol Bol in the COVID protocol? That's news that I need to
know. No.
I don't know.
No, he lives in a totally different stratosphere at his height, so it's not possible.
There's no COVID up there.
Not possible for viruses to survive past that point.
Altitude.
Yeah, exactly. And he's in Denver too, so you got to really imagine how high he is at the moment. Another question from Singh, who asks, what do you think of a possible JaVale McGee trade center around Terrence Davis? Would you trade Terrence Davis or JaVale McGee?
Yeah, we just talked about how cool we think JaVale McGee is.
All right. Like, well, maybe you're not the most objective JaVale McGee observer. I feel like you probably still need to get more than just JaVale McGee, but functionally, who would deliver more for the Raptors? I think it might be JaVale. It's mostly just because the Raptors need some more production, but I doubt the Raptors go out and get JaVale. Although he's 4 points per game this year. He's shooting threes. Yikes. What do other NBA teams, what goes through their mind when they let JaVale McGee shoot 4 of 11 from three in the span?
Players centers. It's Colin Sexton and four centers.
You're right. Actually, I don't understand. So why do teams have such, like, Cleveland intentionally built a team where they drafted two point guards back to back. They're playing them together. Colin Sexton and Darius Garland. But then they had Kevin Porter Jr., who is now apparently got mad because his locker got moved because of a trade and threw some soup around in the locker room. I don't understand. Yeah. Why is Cleveland still serving soup after J.R. Smith threw some soup on somebody else already? Stop serving soup. It's not an essential food item. I love soup. But why are you drinking soup before a basketball game? Like, it's...
Don't all these guys eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches?
Yeah, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches with soup. Like, what are you like a call? That's what I ate. That's what I ate in college. All right.
Yeah, it sounds like you're homesick from like grade three.
Yeah.
I kind of shout out to Kobe Altman. Is that his name?
That's
the GM
his name.
Yes. Shout out to that guy. What are you doing? I really want to pick your brain.
Why do you have so many centers? Yo, they signed Larry Nance Jr. to then now he's basically playing small forward for them. And I'm like, yo, that guy's a center, man.
Yeah, it's like they have a backcourt that sounds like a Weekend album, yes. And it's just
damn.
It's four centers. It's cool. I'm on board. Yeah. Whatever Colby Altman's thinking, just get rid of Kevin Love, and we'll be happy to, you know, see you in the lottery every year for the next few years.
Yeah, they have JaVale McGee, Kevin Love, Larry Nance, Andre Drummond, and. They just traded for Jared Allen, who has not played for them yet. And I believe, if I'm correct, this dude, Dean Wade, is also a big. Yeah, so they just have tons of bigs. So just give us one for free, please. Ideally, honestly, I wouldn't mind. Definitely would not mind Raptors getting Jared Allen, but I don't know if that's possible at the moment.
Yeah, now just catching lobs for the next, you know, 3 years in Toronto.
Perfect. And he's defensively sound. I really like him. Rebounds the ball really well. I was really impressed with him in the Nets series. Another question. Trade package from JDG47. Would you trade Norm and a second-round pick for P.J. Tucker? How many times are the Raptors going to trade second-round picks for expiring P.J. Tucker only for him to leave? I'm good.
No.
I'm good. We have Stanley Johnson at home. Next question from Drew. We agreed last time that the team was structurally flawed, but it was not simply a trust the process issue. With the team playing well,
I like that this guy has meeting notes for.
Oh yeah, no, me and Drew, you know, that's my guy, man. With the team playing well and players performing, which one of the guys who is performing well now should Masai use as a trade piece to fix the larger structural issue?
It's Norm, but whatever. Why do people keep asking, like, holding this?
People just want you to say over and over again, yeah, to trade, to it's trade, like, your fellow Jamaican.
Holding the trade Norm Powell gun to my head. Uh-huh. It's, yeah, he makes money. He could bring back somebody who makes money. If the Raptors want a veteran who can produce, Norm Powell is as good a trade piece as the Raptors have right now to accomplish it. What more do you want from me, you people? I sound like Don Cherry, you people.
I forgot. That's right. You really got canceled for that. Rightfully so. But honestly, for the totality of his career, he should be canceled. But regardless. Yeah. My question is, how well do you think Raptors are going to play for Masai to not answer the phone about Kyle Lowry trades?
It 100% matters. Like, he should, like, create a Kyle Lowry. Masai should buy a new phone for this for the Kyle Lowry trade hotline, uh-huh. And Kyle Lowry should have, like, an Apple Watch that gets also a notification when somebody calls, and Kyle Lowry has to be the one to answer the phone call. You know what I mean? Like, it should just be
Kyle as a GM would be great. Honestly, yeah, Kyle can be the head coach of the Raptors next in some time when he is finished playing, or the GM, or the equipment manager, or assistant coach, or head of PR. Head of PR probably.
Head of PR would be hilarious. Would be tough. We would never hear anything from this team.
No, we would literally. This would be the most secretive team possible, man. We wouldn't even know who they're playing. They'd be playing in like masks. Everyone just showing up with an MF Doom mask, and we have no idea who the players even are.
That'd be kind of hard, though.
That would be, though. It would be, right?
For RIP Doom.
Yeah, seriously, man. Rest in peace, man. Hope his family and loved ones are well. More questions. Yeah, I mean, I just think, honestly, to answer my own question about Kyle, like, I think the Raptors probably, by the end of this first half of the season, need to be, I don't know, man, at least 5-6 games above 500. At least. Because
before he goes to Philadelphia for what? A first round pick in Maxey or whatever his name is?
Yes. Tyrese Maxey. I love learning the rookies early on because I have to know who they are, but I didn't follow the draft. So I'm like, yeah, I know about him. He did this in Kentucky. And I was like, no.
I also just looked up Tyrese Maxey's Google images. Every expression this guy has is good. I'm on board.
Yeah, you like his face.
He's just got, like, a good, like, very expressive. And he looks so young. It's weird. Man, NBA players.
I know. I feel super washed. I'm, like, relating to I used to look up to all these guys, like, their different age and stuff. I'm like, I'm the same age as Chris Boucher or, like, Pascal or Fred. I'm like, yeah. It's a little freaky now. Yeah. Anyway, another question. Someone asked Connor. No, Connor T.O. asks, since he was recently waived from Houston, do you think Bruno could have cracked the rotation after 4 years of the Raptors player development was as strong in 2013 as it is now? Could he have had a similar trajectory as Pascal or Fred's career from the G League to the NBA? What do you think?
No, not really.
I don't think so, man. I think they can't just magically turn players into something. Bruno has the physical tools, but I just don't know if he has, like, basketball. Like, I don't know if that was his calling in life, was to play basketball, you know? And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. I just mean that, like, he doesn't look normal or natural when he plays basketball. Like, other sports do you feel like Bruno would have excelled in or been even better in? Volleyball? Oh. He is Brazilian.
Volleyball, yeah. He could have been good at volleyball.
Beach volleyball, yeah. Imagine seeing 7-foot Bruno Caboclo spiking the ball against you.
Ultimate frisbee, a sport.
Oh,
that
man, yes.
NBA player would be phenomenal at ultimate, and it would make, if ultimate was like a big enough profit center.
Mm.
It's kind of like, yeah. It's the reason why, like, American soccer sucks. It's that, like, John Wall would be an amazing soccer player. He just, there's no reason for him to have ever played soccer. Like, imagine Russell Westbrook as a striker. He'd be unstoppable. But there's just not enough money for
Come on, man. If he can't put the ball in the hoop with his hands, I don't know if he could put the ball in the net with his feet. Soccer is very hard. I don't like this argument.
What I'm saying, like, elite athletes are attracted to places to make lots and lots of money,
mm-hmm.
because that's what you should do if you have elite athletic talent. But like, yes, like LeBron James would have been a great football player.
He wouldn't have made
$1 billion in football. But
I genuinely think Zion would have been better in football than basketball. What do you think? I mean, you watch way more football than me. Although I did watch Tom Brady versus Drew Brees, the Mega Bowl.
The Mega Bowl. What did you think of the game? Drew Brees fell apart in the fourth quarter. Yeah,
he was awful.
I don't think Zion would have made more money. It's hard to make more money as a football player unless you're a quarterback. But yeah, like I think Bruno would have made like a great
ultimate frisbee player.
He could have been like pretty good at like Olympic events, like high jump.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean,
but I just hope that Bruno, like, he's doing well. I don't know. When he left Toronto, he still kind of seemed like a newborn calf.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that he has a normal life, and because weren't he in like Bebe?
I'm pretty sure he has a kid and stuff.
Well, that's insane to me.
A friend of me was telling me that he saw Bruno and his partner pushing a stroller around like on Queen a few years back.
Bruno has Bruno's partner is a Toronto person.
I would hazard a guess, but yes. Toronto has had that effect on players, which is great, you know. Shout out to
Steph Curry.
Honestly, shout out Steph Curry, to be honest, right? Because that's the original one.
Shout out Steph.
Shout out Steph Curry. Steph Curry, come home. Come home. Okay.
Could you imagine?
We need to find a good church for Steph in Toronto, and he'll become home.
Yeah.
Like maybe direct him to the one at Jane and 401.
No.
No?
No.
I'm not religious. No. I have no idea. Okay. Yeah. All right. No. All right.
Shout out to anyone who goes to the Prayer Palace, I think, but I don't know about that one. Well, this question, what sports would Bruno be good at?
No, someone asked if Bruno would actually have made it. I don't think so.
I don't think so. No, he didn't really seem...
He's had lots of chances too, by the way. You know Bruno's played in the NBA 7 years?
I guess that makes sense because I'm old now, but yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's a lot. Like the average NBA career is not 7 years, so he's had his chances.
The Brazilian Kevin Durant. Now we have the French Canadian Kevin Durant.
Yeah, I was trying to work like a Montreal kind of tie-in with, what's a KD nickname, like Saint Durant or something like that. But
that's all right.
That's actually not bad. Maybe we go with Saint Durant. I don't know, or maybe it's not good. I don't know. I definitely don't speak much French.
Rue Saint Durant.
I mean, Chris Boucher should have something named after him in Montreal by when it's all said and over, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
NBA champion.
NBA champion.
You know, playing with the Raptors, breaking out now. Maybe most improved player.
Best beard on the team. What do you think?
Let me get a Rue de Boucher, man. That's the extent of the French I can say, other than ordering pizza toppings, which I don't know. Understand, like, why did the...
Why do they teach you that?
If I'm not from Montreal, I'm like, I know all about like bouffe, like, you know, I'm like all this other champignon, fromage, you know, like you could have taught me why useful you... things in French.
Yeah. Because that's the first thing you got to do when you go to Quebec is order pizza.
Definitely. Right.
The head assery of public education.
Seriously, province. Man. Teach us something useful about it, man. In retrospect, I really should have stuck out with French, but yeah, I dropped that thing out quick. All right, last Twitter question. There were actually two more in the DM, so I'll ask those two. But this one from JDG again. Who is the most random starter in Raptors history? Random meaning a player who started on a regular basis but left no real impression. I think he's probably asking this because we had Aaron Baines and Alex Len, who made two starts. Those are definitely in contention at the moment. But I came up with two options. One, 2012, Landry Fields. Made 22 starts. He was, you know, he missed some time due to injuries over that. He averaged 5 points per game. Didn't really play much.
Have you kept up with Landry Fields?
Funny story. I ran into Landry Fields at the 2019 D-League showcase in Mississauga. Bruno played really well in that game, by the way, one of those games.
Shout out.
And also Alex Caruso was like clearly one of the best players there, and now he's actually a good player with the Lakers, so good for him. But I was at 2019 D-League Showcase, and I ran into Landry Fields. I ran into Anthony Parker. I ran into a whole bunch of former Raptors, D. Brown. And yeah, it's actually kind of amazing. Pops Mensah-Bonsu was also like was working in some capacity. Like, it's actually amazing how much the NBA has like managed to retain a lot of the players, because there's opportunities for them. Yeah. These are just random players, right? Who have gone on to have nice positions. I think Landry Fields is like a G League GM now, I think. I know Anthony Parker definitely
was. Yeah, he's I think he was a scout for the Hawks. Now he's in the Spurs universe, and he's the – oh, I'm wrong. He's the assistant GM of the Hawks. He was in the Spurs organization with their G League affiliate, and now he's assistant GM of the Hawks. That guy figured it out. Like,
yeah.
He's like 30 – he's like early 30s now. He had a kid right after he left the Raptors. That's a guy who could recommend churches to Steph Curry. So – if you're listening, I don't know. Tell Steph where to, you know, attend a service when people can't go into churches anymore. It's COVID-19.
That is true. Maybe this is the perfect time. You get Steph connected with a Toronto stream or something like that.
That's yeah.
So I got 2012 Landry Fields because he was super random. And Landry Fields was supposed to be a 3-and-D player. He made a grand total of 3 3-pointers in 3 seasons with the Raptors. It's kind of unbelievable. And then 2011, the Raptors started Aaron Gray 40 times. And he averaged 4 points. He was probably the closest I've seen to Baines and Len was Aaron Gray. Same level of mobility. Gray was actually a little bit bigger. Had some, like, okay passing skills. And was, you know, gave everyone very impassioned hugs during the infamous Rudy Gay trade episode of Open Gym. But yeah, that season, 40 starts for Aaron Gray.
That's a lot. The guy that That's I thought
a of, lot. Yeah. Even going back in time, like the Raptors have generally started players who were NBA players. And it's only occasionally when they've had some very, very strange players who have stuck out.
I remember Reggie Evans, year after Chris Bosh leaves, he starts to start. I remember thinking maybe the Raptors will be okay. Because he was like great on the boards for a while.
So good.
And then he like, did he like break both of his hands or something? Like something happened. I don't remember it.
What could have happened? He rebounded so hard he broke both hands.
I don't remember what happened, but he like got injured. Uh-huh. And I remember thinking, like, damn, like, not that he was really that good. Like, he didn't score. Mm-hmm. But I remember thinking, like, okay, like, this is okay. Like, the Raptors will be okay. Like, I was obviously not surprised, but bummed out to see before leave. But yeah. Reggie Evans was always, like, a random Raptors contributor. But Landry Fields is a good answer because that guy – he remember, like, he was brought in to help get Steve Nash, and then...
Yeah, I know, man. Well, I mean, you know, he seemed like a great dude, honestly. He seems like a great dude.
He was in the
PS Vita commercials. And I remember one of his threes where Kyle Lowry broke down Victor Oladipo. I think this is when Victor was a rookie or something, when he was with the Magic. And Kyle Lowry kicked the ball to the corner to Landry Fields. It was such a beautiful crossover. Like, Kyle Lowry rarely drops a guy, but he dropped Victor Oladipo, kicked it to the corner to Landry Fields. And Landry, like, it looked like when you're downloading a giant file, you know, that bar is just, like, slowly, like, itching along. That's how his, like, arm was warming up to shoot. And he had – I'm not even trying to make fun of him because, like, he had, like, some real injury issues with his nerves and stuff like that that prevented him. It's not he didn't work hard on the shooting. It's just he physically couldn't do it. But he made that 1-3 in the corner, and I remember like how happy everyone was. Honestly, shout out Kyle Lowry, man. Just always.
Is this started as a shout out Landry Fields?
Well,
no, there aren't that many positive Raptors memories without Kyle Lowry on the floor, so it makes sense.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and then in terms of the two questions from the DMs that I received, One is unnamed. Like I guess if people in the DMs, you can just stay unnamed unless they don't want to be, but unnamed question. Whenever I worked in the media room last season, Stanley came in to grab popcorn and always was in such a good mood. It's awesome to see him playing so good.
This is the most Alex question in the world.
I was going to say, this is not from Alex, but definitely, you know, this is what Alex did. And Alex said many times.
Wait, this isn't did. Alex?
This isn't not Alex, okay?
It's not Stephen LeBron. Then?
It's also not JQ. What do you think the main reason for him playing so good this season and in the bubble? I also think it's just he bought into his role like way more than anything else. He also said that after the bubble was over, he came to Toronto, even though he's an LA guy and everyone works down in LA in the NBA. He stayed in Toronto and just worked with the coaches for like four straight months, which is always going to buy you a lot of goodwill. And it's going to help you get a leg up in terms of what you're going to start. And I think that gave him an advantage over other guys coming into the team that were new. And I think he just bought into his role, and he had enough talent to be in the NBA, absolutely. And he's now just finding what he can do at a consistent level, which is defend. And for Nick Nurse, that's something that he's going to play you for. So I think it's really just the fact that he put in those 4 months in Toronto. I think that's the biggest factor.
Yeah, I like the Stanley Johnson thing. There was an opportunity. There was a need. Like, you lose Rondé, you lose Serge. There's kind of a opening.
Mm-hmm.
He, without a free agent signing in that position, would have the first crack at it. And it's also the last crack he had at being an NBA rotation player.
Mm.
The stakes were high. The opportunity was pretty good. Like, he would get to play serious minutes with starters. He's made the most of it. Like, I don't know. Is it too late for you to imagine Stanley Johnson having a Trevor Ariza type career? Probably not. And I think he knew, like, I think he knew that he can be a guy who bounces around and has an NBA job for the next decade. I wouldn't be surprised. He's, how old is he now? He's like late 24
years old, man.
Yeah, he's quite young. Like, he will, it'd be weird.
But
if
he's also at the age where he kind of has to make or break at this point, right?
And yeah,
I think he's taking a positive step, so why not see it through, man? You know,
you think the Raptors, do you have any interest in the Raptors retaining him, or that's,
if he plays like this next year, yeah, why not? I mean, I don't see anything wrong with it, and I think he's a guy that everyone in the locker room gets along with. Seems to have tons of friends around the NBA. He was just like, yeah, I know Luka. And I was like, how do you know Luka? But, you know, Stanley seems like a very positive guy. Seems a very upbeat guy, very thoughtful. And
great taste in glasses.
I mean, last year he had the shades. It wasn't quite the Kanye West, like blinders. But, no, they were not bad. They were red. So, yeah. All right, and then the other question from the DMs. Also comes from another anonymous DMer who has said, hey, Will, hope all was well. I've been thinking about it for a while now and was wondering if you could touch on it on the podcast with Josh today. Do you think Masiah Bobby cost us a proper transition year by waiting for Giannis to come to Toronto next year? We could have had a guy like Christian Wood, who I feel like would have fit in great with the Raptors culture. He goes on to mention the flexibility next year for a super big star doesn't really mean much if there's no superstars left. I think, yeah, I mean, when you make a choice of keeping your cap room open that hard and the guy ends up re-signing, that is a gamble that you take, and you live with the consequences. Part of those consequences are, you know, some of the things I see now with the center position where they're just kind of barren. Whether they were going to sign Christian Wood or not, I don't know. But, I mean, I don't know. Houston definitely looked very smart for doing it. Christian Wood's averaging 24 points per game and 11 rebounds with 1.7 blocks, shooting 54% in 11 games. It's pretty good. He's pretty good. And he was quite good on the Pistons last year too.
Yeah. No, he's good. Yeah, I don't know. I like this question, but it sort of again presents the like problem Raptors fans always have is like, do you build this team the way that Raptors teams have been successful in the past, which is you have a competent core, you look to see if you can swing for the fences on a superstar that can take you over the top. Look, that's how the Raptors won their title. I still think Masai and Bobby did the right thing in building the core that they have today, signing them to money through the next few years while retaining enough flexibility to take this team over the top. I don't think Christian Wood means the Raptors are a top three seed in the East. I do not believe that. I think Giannis would have, and that's the difference. Like, I don't know, would you rather be a six seed or a four seed?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't have mind if they signed a Christian Wood. I think part of the reason why Christian Wood is a lot of teams are kind of like maybe regretting it is because he signed for 3 years, $41 million.
He's hilariously
low. But I mean, oddly enough, Chris Boucher is already giving this kind of production.
I mean, not quite, but yeah, it's
I think 29 other teams in the NBA should be asking themselves why they didn't sign Christian Wood. The Pistons of all teams should be asking themselves why they didn't sign Christian Wood, but decided to sign like five other centers that were worse than Christian Wood.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's a good point. Also, I mentioned on the show last week, the Pistons, sneaky good TV. I like the Pistons.
They're very competitive. Like they compete in a lot of those games. Yeah. Jeremy Grant's done a lot of nice things for them. Blake Griffin is not nearly as good as he once was, but they defend and they just get just enough offense out of their team. This is
to be right there at the end.
This is like the discount Knicks, man. This is really like a discount version of the Knicks.
Oh, that's a really good comparison. Well, yeah, that's a good comparison.
All right. It's come to the end of the podcast, which means it's also time for our signature segment, Malachi's Missions, formerly known as Stanley's Suggestions. We had a suggestion from someone who, Sana, who asked, can we change Malachi's Missions to Aaron's Errands? Which I do like, but unfortunately...
He's not going to be on the team long enough.
Yikes. But it's still Malachi's Missions until Baines is formally benched. He's still getting his spot starts, looking marginally better by the day, but... Still could use a serious upgrade there. Anyway, Malachi's Missions for this week / Aaron's Errands for this week. Josh, what do you got?
Mine is Lupin on Netflix, starring Omar Sy. It's a new series. It's like a hit. I really liked it. I watched it.
So what's it about?
It's a like retelling of a French novel series, Arsène Lupin. It's like a mastermind thief. It's kind of like if you enjoy like the Ocean's 11 movies and also like crime procedurals, you're gonna have fun watching this show. It's in French. Their subtitles are great. I don't listen to dubs. But it's really good, starring Omar Sy. He's a great actor. I really am enjoying it. So if you're looking for something to watch on streaming, I'd suggest that one. How about you? What do you have for Malachi to get up to this week?
I will take that suggestion myself, actually. That does sound pretty good. And although, by the way, I got to say, Omar Sy in The Untouchables, the original one, not the one with Kevin Hart, man.
And Bryan Cranston.
That's the perfect way to describe America, is they took something as beautiful as The Untouchables and did it with Kevin Hart and Bryan Cranston in that crass way. That's unbelievable. But anyway, if you ever seen the original movie itself, definitely watch that one. It's one of my favorite memories. I was on a plane to China, which Toronto to Beijing is 16 hours, I think. So me and my brother, we got to spend a lot of quality time together, and we watched this movie together, and we were both like kind of in tears at the end of it, which is super awkward because we're just surrounded by like, you know, Asian aunties and uncles. And I was like, maybe I should collect myself a little bit. But no, that movie is such a beautiful movie. One of my favorites for sure. So I'll definitely check out Lupin. My suggestion was also on Netflix. Fran Lebowitz, the author / humorist. I watched the three episodes of her show Pretend It's a City yesterday, and yeah, really, really fun. She is very, very funny. She does it in conversation with her close friend Martin Scorsese, and
what a flex.
No, I was seriously though, and Spike Lee's in a few of them as well, so you know, they have thought-provoking conversations. As I was saying to my partner, it feels like when you watch it, it's like two people are reading an essay together, and then you guys can kind of talk about it afterwards. So it's a nice show. It's funny, but maybe watch it after Lupin. But definitely stay inside and don't go outside unnecessarily. Don't, wash your hands, wear a mask, close your mouth and wash and wear a mask or whatever Fred said.
Yes, please do. And we'll have a formal announcement about the Colin show returning incoming. Mm-hmm. We just don't want to say something and then not meet that date and disappoint everybody. But we're working hard. I'm excited.
Looking forward to people's calls. Well, thanks, Josh. As always, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll be back next week to answer more questions. Peace.
Peace.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.